When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Hello and welcome to this week's pod, where we'll be digesting the final results from the Six Nations, looking ahead to the return of the Premiership and bringing you a roundup of all the latest rugby news. My trusty sidekick is with me in the studio from the Evening Standard. It is Steve Cording. A much happier Steve now that Man United have finally beaten their top team and produced a decent performance.
Finally won a game. I feel like we're talking about football every week when come on now. But yeah, I guess when Chelsea win the FA Cup, then we can stop talking about it, can't we? Again, yeah.
listen, a cracking game of football, but that's not our interest. Our guest this week spent 12 years playing for Saracens, winning four Premiership titles, three European Cups in the process, and earned 45 caps for England. Since retiring from playing, he's gone from strength to strength, literally, with his health and wellness supplement business, 4-5. But he still finds time to keep a hand in rugby and helping currently the England rugby team with his line-out services as a consultant to Steve Borthwick's team. George Cruz, how are you, my friend?
Good, thank you very much. What a lovely intro.
Oh, I know. Well, listen, it's like a...
You've done your research.
It's like a Christmas carol, you know. Four Premiership titles, two European Cups. It was part of that golden era, of course. I guess because of your involvement, you're obviously glued to the internationals. Outside of that, what's a normal weekend look like for you now? Are you still one of those guys that's still close enough to the game to want to watch a little bit of it?
I'll definitely watch some games. I do enjoy still watching Saris and some of the lads there still very much right in my age group. So I enjoy that. But really, the shackles are off in the sense that, you know, when you play for 12, 14, 15 years or whatever, and you get 40 weekends of the year dictated to you, it's just nice to be able to, you know, go to your brother's wedding or go to, like, actually plan stuff or go on holiday and all those sort of things.
So just remind our listeners, when you retired, you did two seasons in Japan. You won two titles in Japan, which was pretty incredible. So you definitely chose the right team.
Yeah. No, it was a brilliant team, actually. I was over in Panasonic. I couldn't have enjoyed it more.
Based in
North Tokyo. I mean, it's greater Tokyo, right? So it's a big old place, but... about maybe 45 minutes from Shinjuku, which would be like the happening area.
You must have been something out of
Godzilla over there.
I mean, they must have been terrified of you.
Yeah, they've got these things where it has to make a noise on your camera phone. I won't go into why, but you'll be going down the street and you'll be hearing pitches. It's not because of rugby, they don't really care for that, but it's like tall, blonde, I had a beard back there as well. Like, it's just complete freak show.
It's
to
like
them.
You're from another planet, literally.
Exactly that, yeah.
I take it you don't get time, though, to entertain clients at Cheltenham last week, like the rest of... Did you have a good week?
Not all of us are jolly. Some have got work, you know.
You popped up in my phone. One of my mates took a selfie with you and sent it, and apparently he said, our mates with Steve Corden. You said, I've never heard of him.
I didn't say that. I said, but prove it. And then he showed me some very interesting footage. Actually,
thanks for that Patrick. Yes, thanks for that.
Do you know what?
Did you have a good week?
I didn't have a week there. I mean, one day's enough for me now.
I went Wednesday.
Due to go Tuesday. I went Thursday.
Were you up, down?
Just about. I did okay.
I was saved by Captain Guinness and Rachel Blackmore on Wednesday. If she hadn't won, then it would have been a disastrous day.
I managed to get 4 out of 7 winners, but that was nothing to do with me at all. It was, being a bit of luck and being given a couple of decent tips.
Well, I must just give a shout out as well to my daughter, who 6 years old, Sophia. She appeared on stage at Epsom Playhouse on Saturday, so I wasn't actually watching the Wales Italy game. Yeah, I was watching her. They were doing so. Her school, dance school, Lucinda Walsh, fantastically put on a production every year, and it was Legends and Icons, and she did the ABBA set.
Oh,
so
amazing.
She did a little solo dance to Super Trooper.
So creative, talented, beautiful. Yeah. You sure you picked up the
Can't
right
be
child?
Yours.
Did you pick up the right child?
Takes after a mother. I knew that was coming. So predictable. Can we talk about rugby now then?
Yeah, let's get on. We had a cracking weekend of rugby. Very entertaining, actually, with some very close games. I think something, what's the stat? 15 games have been won by one score or less. So,
all three by less than a score, wasn't it?
Congratulations to Ireland for winning back-to-back championships. Only the third time in their history that they've managed to achieve that. And we'll talk a little bit more about that game against Scotland in a while. But first of all, we're going to go to Lyon for the final game of the championship. The atmosphere, I have to say, I was lucky enough to be there.
Looked
working
incredible.
With ITV. The atmosphere is incredible. Just over 50,000.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what the French do, but, you know, they definitely get it right. The build-up, they had a light show, laser show.
Do you think they've benefited from, obviously, taking the game away from Paris as they had to because it's being prepared for the Olympics? I mean, I know
real fans, yeah.
Well, it's something that it's been cried about for years, isn't it, that England should do the same. They never will. They never leave Twickenham. But taking it around the country, Marseille, Lyon, Lille, it's made a difference,
hasn't it? Yeah, I mean, it's a balancing act because if you do that, you lose revenue. There's no doubt about that. I mean, what's... Stade de France, Twickenham is what, 80-odd thousand? Lyon is 50,000. So 30,000, well, RFU prices, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And maybe at this time in the year, the French rugby union are not in great shape. They've overinvested in their team. You know, their average spend has gone from 13 million euros to 20 million in the last 4 years. They got beaten in the World Cup. So they're definitely making cuts. But you have to say, they had no choice but to take the games away from Paris. And I think I played in Marseille, I'm sure you have. Yeah. So playing in places like Lyon, Marseille, a lot tougher than playing in Paris, definitely.
Yeah, they got a bit of like a footbally sort of crowd to them. Yeah. You know, they're quite spicy down there.
Have you ever played in that stadium, Lyon?
Have you?
Yeah, it does look like it's very atmospheric. Yeah, and the light show just helps it, doesn't it, before it starts?
I mean, just talking about the game, obviously, it was an incredible game. From an England perspective, people saying, well, what was success in this championship? Now, I know the team would always say at the beginning of the title, you know, we want to go out and win the title.
Yeah.
But realistically, from where we were, I said at the beginning of the tournament, if we win three games, I'll be quite pleased with that because we haven't actually done that for a few years. Very unusual for a team to go from there to there overnight. And I think we did that, beating Ireland. And I think what we're looking for is a bit of consistency in performance. Now, you're back involved, George, in the England team. People keep saying, well, what's different from 2 weeks ago against Scotland to now to the French game? You've got to trust a group of players and you've got to be consistent with what you've told them. And I think for the first time in a while, Steve and his coaches have picked, you know, give or take one player, maybe dropping out through injury, a fairly consistent and settled team. And it makes a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100%. I think, like, it's worth noting, I think, when you look at the Scotland game, they did go out to play. They just... made a load of handling errors, you know, and then that does have an effect on your momentum, has effect on, you know, when you look at any sort of statistic timelines when you're playing, if you lose back-to-back sort of possessions, then it has a detrimental effect and, you often lose points from there. So, yeah, I think, look, they've been... like brewing, that it has been sort of, you know, they have been wanting to attack, they have been wanting to sort of play smart, decent rugby. I think the Scotland one, you know, there were three tries from 50 metres out and they did go there to attack. So I think, like, to see that off the back of the Ireland game and then the French game, obviously still, you know, good, decent bit of sort of attacking shape to it as well, and like confidence in how they want to play. I think they have been building that, and I think things take time to layer in. And, you know, when you say, to your point, consistency of team, I think that is a big thing. You look at Ireland team, probably hasn't changed in 2-3 years. You look at New Zealand, the consistency to be able to layer stuff up is definitely a piece.
Do you know what I thought I saw in the Ireland game, which I think pleased everyone? Obviously, the gain line has been an issue for England, right? And as soon as you get over the gain line and, you know, you win that kind of physical confrontation, I've been, you know, lucky enough to get all the stats. I've been looking at George Ford. Every game that we played in this championship, he's got flatter and flatter and flatter. And in the French game, he was literally, you know, making them make decisions so last minute. So I think guys like Ollie Lawrence have helped enormously. But for the first time in a while, I saw a bit of innovation in the lineout against Ireland. There was a couple of little cheeky ones at the front.
Yeah.
And I'd like to
thank George for that.
Well, I'd like to think that, listen, he can own up to it now. But I, you know, when I've seen England play at their very best in the last 4 or 5 years, when you were involved, Ireland in 2019, when we threw the first lineout over the top, you know, the one in the World Cup against New Zealand, you know, I think England had become a little bit predictable, if I'm honest. And I thought against Ireland, what was a breath of fresh air was not just the kind of energy and the passion and some pretty naughty clear outs at the breakdown, but also the actual line out. And tell us a little bit about your role and how Steve's brought you into the England group.
Yeah, like, I think probably just Steve taught me a lot about line outs. I've taught Mara a lot about line outs. And I think really it's just a, you know, if you're head coach, you've got a lot of plates to spin. And I think probably an extension of sort of mindset, and he, I guess, knows sort of what roughly I'd bring to the table. But essentially, really just doing a lot of analysis. It's not really coaching led. It's like having a bit of a soundboard, presenting some themes, some sort of strategy towards it.
I mean, that's a big move for Steve, because that's an area where he's renowned, and he is the Yoda of that kind of thing. I mean, that's what he did. So for him to have the trust and in you and say, look, you know, I need your eyes and ears on this, and let me know what you think, is pretty cool.
You don't actually go into training then, you're actually doing more of it in terms of
a lot online in the week, but like I was in Sunday, I've been in back and forth, and over the World Cup I was back and forth to France most weekends. But yeah, like, it's just the fact that he's not a forwards coach now. He's head coach, and you just can't, you know, there's not enough time in the day, and you guess you need people who sort of, you know, a rough bit about to slot in.
He still likes to climb up the ladder and catch the balls, doesn't he?
Yeah. I mean,
never seen Hooker miss one of them, mate.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, give it just a couple of questions while we've got you. I mean, obviously, you know, I hope you'd be taking a bit of 4 or 5 products in there and just leaving it lying around the hotel.
I do need to get on that Amazon stuff.
Any chance of England taking up on this, please, Steve? Yeah. Because it's obviously, you know, what do you call it? The nutritional supplement or the health and wellness supplement of both Saracens, as you'd expect, and Leicester Tigers. So hopefully England will be next. What do you think, Steve? I mean, look, he took over a year early.
Yeah.
I understand that more than most, that he inherited a squad that was unsettled, 108 different players used by Eddie Jones, you know, 22 different coaches been through the door in 6 years. So it took a bit of rejigging. Mm. What do you think that he's learned and brought to this year's campaign?
Like, he knows how to work unbelievably hard. It always has done. So I think that theme sort of has run through with England for a number of years now in terms of from coaching setup. But I think, to your point around consistency of players, he's also brought consistency of coaches, you know, and decent quality coaches as well, who really care about what they're doing and is sort of like player-led first, you know.
The other thing that I was really super impressed with is when we lost to Scotland, and it was a bad loss, and let's be honest, it's the sixth one in 7 years or whatever it is. It would have been easy to panic and drop a load of players and bring in a load of others. And he actually stuck with the team and said, look, go out there and prove that was...
George Ford has said today, he said that the penny dropped with the squad after that defeat, which he kind of wished it had dropped a little bit earlier maybe. But to be fair to them, I mean, those last two performances were outstanding. I mean, if you look at the stats and the difference between everything in terms of points scores, try scored, line breaks, red zone efficiency, it just shot up post that, didn't it? I mean, as an overall assessment, George, of England during the Six Nations, what would you give them as a mark out of 10, considering where we were when we started?
Look, I think obviously they want to go out and win everything, right?
Yeah. Mm.
But the underlying thing is, it's like momentum and improvement, and like, how can you continue that? I think, like, definitely, you know, a new defence coach in a very different style of defence. You've got 5, 6, 7, 8 new caps. You've got like an underlying stuff of, you know, there has to be a bit of focus on gel, cohesion, and sort of like making sure that you've got enough time to bed certain things in.
If you look at the performance against Italy in Rome, and then you look at the end of the tournament, which is only 7 weeks, and the performance against France, albeit a narrow defeat, I mean, that is chalk and cheese. I mean, you know, so we all thought the Scotland defeat was a massive step backwards, but actually listening to George and reflecting on it, they did try and go out and play, just nothing stuck, but I think they've taken two very big steps forward, and it's a balance, isn't there? You're around the squad, you know the personalities, you played with some of them. There's a group of quite experienced players. Some of them might have played their last game for England, like Danny Kerr. I don't know, you know, Joe Marler, how much longer are these, Dan Cole, how much longer is that group going to go on? I think you look at the people that they've brought in. You know, George Furbank's been a massive plus, Ollie Lawrence, Freeman, George Martin in the second row, Ollie Chesham, Ben Earl, probably the outstanding player of the championship. Didn't deserve to give away that last penalty. I don't quite understand how you can not put he offered his arm, but it would have been broken had he kept it up there. It's a really tough one for him. But I think there's been quite a few positives for England, and I think the fans probably...
You got him out of giving his answer out of 10, didn't you? You talked around that one. You could see him start to squirm. Give him a good 10.
I think, for me, momentum in these sort of things is absolutely everything. And to be able to look back and go, right, we lost two games by... the Scotland game was, 15 points or something. But really, the last three other games that we've lost have been by like 2 or 3 points. And then you start putting that in a wider thing, and okay, some of it hasn't been pretty, but you start looking at a wider thing, and you've got, you know, bar that Scotland game, if you'd won those games by 2, 1 or 2 points, you've you know, you're like 11 out of 12 or something. So I think they've done a good job of like grimming and bearing through the tougher bits in terms of like hustling down and making sure that you get some wins. But now I feel like they are sort of express themselves a bit more, and that momentum is key. I'd much rather be a side that's like gone somewhere and moving somewhere instead of being like a fully settled side that is still getting sort of thirds and bits like that.
But also, and also the way that they play, particularly against Ireland and France, I think bodes very well for the tour in the summer, because if you're going to get anything out of New Zealand, you know, that's the way you got to play. The attacking game, we were saying England at the beginning of the tournament were clueless, devoid of any ideas of how to attack. And then at the end of the tournament, they've outscored France 4-3 away from home. You know, they put 3 tries on Ireland. So, you know, we've got to give them a lot of credit.
Yeah. I'm real pleased for Richard Wigglesworth and the whole coaching group. Like, yeah. you see, you know, I get lucky enough to dip into some of those meetings, and you see the effort and the amount of thought that goes into coaching those lads, and the endless hours, and the, you know, how smart they are in terms of how to create strategy, how to create plans, how to, you know, use psychologists to work with the team to make sure that it hits bang on. And I think the win against Ireland was a big one, but to back up and get some good tries against France, yeah, I'm happy for the coaching side, but still so much more to go. You look at someone like George Martin, he's 21, 22.
It was his first start in the Six Nations, this tournament.
He's just an absolute beast.
Well, you mentioned Richard there. I mean, in terms of that noise that was going on around after the defeat by Scotland, claims, counterclaims about how many times people were touching the ball in training and attack. I mean, how easy is it for them to shut that noise out and just go, we know what we're doing, we're confident in our plan, we're not going to listen to anybody else, and we're just going to carry on? Is it easy to do that?
Yeah, I mean, that's what like can make and break teams. I think that's where your culture comes into it heavily. Mm. You know, can you batten down the hatches and sort of like take on the shots that are coming your way, and then come out and actually play and, you know, continue to not take that fear on board as such? So,
I mean, Steve actually talked about it, didn't he? He said during the tournament after the Scotland game, he thought that the weight and the burden of playing for England was weighing quite heavily on a few players. Mm. I mean, listen, if you play well, people write really nice things about you, probably exaggerate and get overhyped. If you play really badly and you lose by 15 points for the sixth time out of 7, people are going to write the opposite.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you're that bad. And when you win, you're not as good as people write. Yeah. And I think as a player and coaches, you've just got to, you know, just stay calm. And it's difficult. And listen, if you want to use that as motivation to make you play better, you know, as Ben Earl alluded to in his interview, then fine. But the reality is, you don't need to read the paper or watch the news to know whether you play well or not.
How good was Ben Earl? Carried the ball more than anyone else in the tournament. He played every minute. He was 6 on metres made, and the next best forward was 26. And he conceded, how many penalties? One.
Well, one at the end, which is tragic, really.
But I mean, as a former Sarri's teammate, I mean, how good was he? English player of the tournament?
I'd say definitely, like some of those stats. Where he's gone from to where he is now is just like it's, you know, and in terms of, and he'd be happy enough saying, like, in terms of like when he turned up to Sarri's, he came with like an attitude that wasn't the right one, and you know, was spat out largely for bits of it, you know, and you can be tainted with that brush for ages, and you know, you could be, especially in a team like we had at Sarri's, where, you know, if you're not exactly clicking with everyone, then you can be spat out pretty quickly. He took everything on board, not only from an off-field perspective, but from an on-field perspective, and he's so good. And he's still so young as well, which is pleasing. He's got lots more growth in him.
I would say, you know, I think he's probably the player of the tournament, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you look at the consistency of his performances, he outplayed Caelan Doris, like completely outplayed him off the park. Mm. Like, we didn't even mention Doris in the Ireland game at all. And that's one of the best number eights in the world, by the way. He then went up against Gregory Aldrett, who's a pretty decent player. And I thought he outplayed him at the weekend as well. So Ben Earl was already established in World Cup, but he's taken a huge step forward. I mean, George Martin and Ollie Chesham, I think those two in particular. Marrow, we haven't mentioned him. You know, everyone always has a pop at him when things aren't going so well. But I think he's been quite consistent throughout this tournament and actually played very well.
And also look at the minutes he's racking up as well. He's been brilliant this tournament.
What's your view? Because you, having benefited from having a couple of years in Japan, these players have come back from the World Cup. I'm pretty sure that they could have done with a little bit of a breather, but they go straight back into their Premiership and then Six Nations. Mm. Would you recommend the type of sabbatical that you had earlier in your career, or do you think it's something that you have to wait till the end of your career now to have done what you did in Japan?
I reckon from a Japanese perspective, they're probably looking at people who are sort of your 26, 27s now rather than your 31. 32, 31s, yeah. But I'm a huge fan of it. I think New Zealand do it well. I think Ireland do it well in terms of how they manage their players from a central contract perspective.
Just give the listeners an idea, how many games did you play then in a Japanese season? And bear in mind, your team, Panasonic, got to the final 2 years running.
Yeah.
How many total amount of games did you play?
We played maybe a couple of warm-up games, and then first year that was COVID, so we played 13 games, and then the second year was sort of 16 games. So versus I'd rack up 32 games for 13 seasons in a row.
So like, half the number of games, double the money. Perfect.
Wow. Yeah, there's a lot to be said for it, isn't it? I mean, you look at it now going forward. I mean, we've got now summer tour to Japan, and then we play the All Blacks twice, and then play the All Blacks again in the autumn.
It's going to be tough for Steve, because he's got to have a little sit down with George and all these other coaches and go, well, who do we take? But you can't not go to New Zealand fully loaded, because
you've been there unloaded before, and you know what happens.
I partnered Steve in the second row when Simon Shaw got sent off after minute one, and that didn't go well.
How do you think they'll do in those three matches?
If they continue to build as they have been, they've got loads to play for. What the England team have been doing well at the moment is also like the off-field sort of prep and making sure they're using that downtime as wise as possible. But I guess New Zealand will have a few games.
They've got the Rugby Championship to be played. So I think it's exciting. We haven't played New Zealand for a while, have we? So
It'll be
very exciting.
So should we just have a look at the other weekend results then? We've obviously been working with the QBE predictor across the tournament. Forecasts for the weekend were a Wales win, 25-15 over Italy. That was actually the other way around, 24-21 to Italy. Ireland 27, Scotland 15 was the forecast, and it finished 17-13. And France 30, England 19, and that finished, as we know, 33-31. So the results actually a lot closer in a lot of the games. And across this tournament, as you mentioned, 10 of the 15 have been decided by 5 points or less, which is unbelievable, really, isn't it? But I think we have to say congratulations to Italy on their best ever finish. I've just finished watching Full Contact, and you watch that and you watch the Italians during the Six Nations last year to where they are now, and it's an unbelievable transformation, isn't it?
Ireland get the headlines, obviously, and England, naturally, because of their status and who they are, we're talking about them. But I think the story of this tournament has been Italy, really, because they gave England a run, and that result in Rome doesn't look like the worst result in the world for England now.
It doesn't.
They've beaten Scotland.
No.
They've beaten Wales. They were one kick away from beating France.
It's
phenomenal. I think there's just been a transformation. We've been hearing about how much they're improving, particularly at under 20 level, and that's coming through. And Michele Lamaro, the captain, it sort of epitomises that. He's just beaten the record for total number of tackles made in the tournament. I mean, they're tough boys now. I think Gonzalo Quesada, he's actually constructed a game plan that reflects their personality. And I think that's really important for the Italians. They look good. They look okay. And they got hammered in the World Cup.
Surprising.
And I think Kieran Crowley, he's obviously a top class coach, but they didn't really gel. The players didn't really gel with him, and vice versa. I think Quesada, in such a short space of time, they look organised. They look, there's structure to their game, and the results are starting to come. So I think we've put to bed that notion that they should be relegated now, don't you?
Yeah, let's forget about who said that from the start of the tournament. And probably the Welsh are hoping that there's not relegation.
I was going to say, should we talk Wales? But probably not.
Well, obviously, Warren Gatland offered his resignation at the end of the tournament.
There's not a lot he can do about it. I think, it was a sad way for George North to go to bow out, because he's been a spectacularly good player.
You know Warren really well. I mean, but as a player, if you hear your coach doesn't want to stay, I mean, does that put a doubt in your mind, or do you think there's a little bit of...
He wants to stay, but I think it's a recognition. He knew that they weren't going to accept his resignation because the payout would be extraordinary. He'd probably bankrupt, the Welsh Rugby Union again. So I think, it's a gesture to acknowledge the fact that the results haven't been good enough. And, there's pressure on all coaches, England, France, whatever. I mean, France were under pressure in the game that they've just won, because, they haven't had a big win at home since the World Cup. So I think it was just an acknowledgement that, results are not good enough. But the reality is, it's not Warren Gatland. There's a lot that needs fixing in Welsh rugby, and it's much lower down than that. And, he has gone the opposite way, and they've almost had an under-21 team, a lot of those players. And it's very, very hard to string any results together. But maybe in 2, 3, 4 years' time, he's picked a 21-year-old captain in Duffy Jenkins. So, maybe the results will come through. I mean, it's not easy, is it?
Hold up. Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
Just talking about that Ireland performance, George, what would you reflect? I mean, Ireland, obviously, you know, they're probably recovering from that England defeat. They looked a little bit leggy, actually, I'll be honest with you, a week later against Scotland, but they got the job done. They won the title and they deserve it. They've been consistently the best team. In terms of Scotland, how do you think Scotland will reflect on their campaign? Because had that refereeing decision gone for them against France, they may have gone into that game in a completely different mindset, or the Italy game anyway.
Yeah, no, mixed one with Scotland. I can never really put a finger on how or when they're going to play well or sort of not. I did think, you know, first 40, 50 minutes of that Ireland game, they stuck at it. They, you know, their defence on the 5 metre line, Ireland were hammering them. Their defence on the 5 metre line was pretty incredible. They've obviously had good, you know, good momentum over the last couple of years. They've done some growing. I think, you know, when you look at England and they've got momentum of, you know, improvement and where they're going. I look at Scotland, I don't know whether they've still got more improvement in them or not.
I mean, all three of their defeats came by 4 points or less.
Yeah, exactly.
So you look at it, they made so many errors in attack, and if they could iron those out, then could, the defensive unit
since
that they've
World
got.
Cup, which they had a pretty tough draw with South Africa and Ireland in their pool, I think they have made progress. But you're confusing me with someone who cares, if I'm honest with you.
Well,
for sure.
But it's not been mentioned yet, actually, but obviously Andy Farrell will not be head coach for Ireland next year's Six Nations. Can Ireland win a third Six Nations in a row?
Of course they can. Listen, this is a team that have lost, what, 3 out of 23 test matches, okay? So,
because Mike Catt's going as well, isn't he now?
I mean, there's a bit of a
few changes.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think the culture that George talked about earlier on is ingrained there. There's a settled squad, but there's still some healthy competition. If you look at the way that they've handled the last, you know, couple of years, you know, winning back-to-back Grand Slams was always going to be a tough ask, but they've won back-to-back championships, you know. I think they'll be okay. They've got a very settled coaching group. Look, I think they'll be fine. I really do.
And what a summer tour we've got to look forward to with them. I mean, arguably, we all think Ireland is still the best team in the world, but they are actually playing the team that won the World Cup. So,
well, when we said that on the last week's pod, the Saffers waded in on social media as they do, you know, and waded in on every other thing, saying, hold on a minute, they're the best team in half the world.
Well, pointed out there is a tournament that decides which team is the best team
in
the world.
But listen, Ireland did beat South Africa in the group, so there we go. Thank you, South Africa.
Yeah.
Listen, they played the best rugby, Ireland, but they didn't win the tournament, did they?
No, not at all.
Are they three tests down there?
I think it is three, isn't it? Yeah, so, I mean, if you can get a series win down in South Africa,
tasty,
then... playing a series win in South Africa? You did, didn't you?
Lions.
Yeah. Not for England, no.
We've won test matches in South Africa.
Tough
we drew the series. We only had time to play two in 2000. But we won the first game, but the TMO, who was from round the corner, by the way, it was the first ever match where they brought in a TMO, and the TMO was not from the neutral territory that he is now. He was South African. And funnily enough, he arrived at a couple of decisions that were definitely the wrong ones.
Oh.
And I think the IRB or World Rugby said, maybe it'd be a good idea if we made the TMO neutral.
That was the first game ever used TMO?
It was in Johannesburg or Pretoria in 2000, yeah.
Fascinating.
And then we won the second test. And then that was the kind of start, really. But look, I think for this Ireland team, they went down to New Zealand, they won a series there. Listen, if you win
in New Zealand and you win in South Africa, there's not much else to do in rugby, really. That they're the hardest two places. And if you do that, at whatever age you are, that gives you the belief that you can do anything in rugby. I was lucky enough to be part of a group, and 24 years, you win a test series in South Africa, you think, well, anything's possible in your career. So, but listen, we better move on to the Premiership.
Yes, because, let's get our minds back in that.
George's old team, Saracens, are playing at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Well, should we remind our listeners that the top four currently is Northampton, Quins, Bath, and Saracens, and obviously Quins are travelling to Saracens on Saturday. You're going, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm heading up. Yeah.
Tickets are still available, I believe, for the game if people want to go. You covering it for TNT?
I shall be there, yeah. Do you know what? As much as I despise Tottenham Hotspur, their stadium is magnificent.
It's an amazing stadium.
It's an incredible stadium.
It's worth just going to soak up what a, like a proper stadium. Yeah, it's bang on.
And to see a beer served upside down, which I remember when I first went to a game with my nephew, he put his finger on it. He went, how on earth have they done that? And he put his finger in the bottom and it went all over the floor. But it is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, listen, George, you know the Saris guys very, very well. Obviously, a lot of change happening at that club, as is, you know, many of the other clubs. Owen has gone over to France, or he's heading over to France at the end of the season. He is one of the greats of the game. He's obviously been the talisman, the driver, the kind of identity, the DNA of Saracens. Obviously, he'll want to go on a high. How do you see that shifting? Are we making too much of it because big players come and go from clubs, and he's just another one of those?
I don't know the full in and out list of Saris, but you could take a look at the, you know, there are three or four probably of those last older heads that maybe have been there since the time that we have.
He could conceivably come back. He's only signed for 2 years.
Yeah, 100%.
What age is Owen? 32, maybe 31?
Yeah.
So, you know, a couple of years, he'll be playing for a lot longer, I think.
But it's exciting. Like, they'll all want to end on a high, and they've all got, like, enough experience. You know, they won it last year. They'll have that, you know, you're past the Six Nations, where the light's at the end of the tunnel if your body's sore and all those sort of things. But you then start to get into that. It's my favourite time of the year, where it was like, you know, trophy season.
Because they've got, it's the kind of running, what we call the business end.
Yeah.
And you've got 7 games now until the final. Just give our listeners an idea. You've been right at the heart of the England team for the last whatever in the Six Nations. You were as a player. How easy is it to come straight back in? Because this game is a big game, and Saracens, you know, they've got to assess each player and go, well, what sort of shape's Mara and Georgie in after, you know, Leon? Do they come straight into the starting lineup? As a player, you kind of want to play in that game, but also that decision is often taken out of your hands, isn't it?
Yeah, look, they've got a window now. It's a bit more structured. They've got a window now where you have to have, I think in the first 3 weeks, you have to have a week off at least.
Yeah, you do, yeah.
Which is brilliant. As a player coming back in, you've got the comfort knowing that you're going to get one. And a lot of coaches you can sort of speak to around, look, this would be an ideal week. I could do this. You could basically book stuff in pre-Six Nations where you go, right, I'm going to get this week
off. The coach will say, I need you this week, but actually I'm going to give you next week off or whatever.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But to the Quins point, like, that's a game in itself, just Quins, that you always want to play, being a bit of a London derby. And then to have it at Tottenham, you don't get to collect stadiums like that. You know, you see the Lyon Stadium, you want to play in different stadiums. And
did you play there in that game before?
I have played in that game, yeah.
It was a big win, actually, for Saracens, I seem to remember. Yeah. Against Quins, that was.
Do you remember? Right. I haven't, no.
Yeah, don't know. They've only played Quins once in that particular outing.
And they've been at the West Ham one before.
And at Wembley.
And at Wembley, yeah. So we used to play there, yeah. Yeah, so those are sort of like the unique games that you want to be playing in.
You played at Saracens for a long time. What makes it special as a club? Lyle asked you about Owen leaving, and that would have taken a big decision. But it does seem that there's a very, very close-knit unit there. Is this something that comes from Mark McCall? Does he instill that in everybody? It feels like a family, doesn't it?
Yeah, big family vibe. I think they spent for ages like building the culture sort of 10 years, 15 years ago. And it's at a point where, because they maybe have been winning trophies, they got the luxury of picking people who want to be there, A, to earn money, but B, to win trophies. So I think they end up picking decent people and people who can play rugby, rather than just like, right, we need a superstar, but he's actually a bit of a, like, he's not useful for the actual team environment. So I think their sort of recruitment has been brilliant.
And stability.
And stability,
I mean,
yeah,
I know 100%. That they've been through all the chaos of the salary cap and all that, but I promise you now, you know, having been part of a WASC team that won trophies in the same way these guys did, if you keep a group of people together for a period of time, whether that's starting off in the academy, and then you slowly, and the key to it is every now and again, you need to add 2 or 3 players that are of significant quality that actually keep the quality players they already have thinking a bit differently about the game.
And different personalities.
Yeah, relegation seemed to knit them together even more, didn't it?
Yeah, I think if you're playing and you're winning like for a consistent period of time, like that narrative does probably wear thin a little bit. So I think that it was a perfect time for that to just to inject a whole new sort of narrative and, you know, a bit of bite, a bit of sort of
jeopardy.
And can the team, you know, be done for that, come back, and then, you know, it's a big point to prove in terms of doing it and then doing it right. And I think they did that, and I think they've got a really nice opportunity now just to see a good view of those like older heads off this year. And I've got no doubt that they'll be firing up big time.
Yeah, before you go, can we ask you about your business? I don't know if you saw Joe Gray on Dragon's Den.
Did you see
that? It was amazing.
Oh, I didn't see
he
that.
Got,
no.
He got investment for MyoMaster from Gary Neville, of all people.
It
seems to be going from strength to strength. Will we see you on Dragon's Den? How is 4-5 performing at the moment?
I don't think we're on Dragon's Den. We've just done a small raise, but it's good, yeah. We're in sort of 10,000 distribution points across Holland Barrett and Boots. We serve to sort of 25 plus professional sports teams.
So you're in all the right places.
We've had some really nice conversations with more retail, you know, and we've got sort of 20 plus international athletes invested in us. So we are really a sports sort of wellness brand. But yeah, I'm super excited about the journey of, you know, like you say, when you've been at a club and you see you build your own culture, you build your own team, like from going around chucking a ball around to be able to, you know, go from locker room to boardroom as such and pitch and sort of.
How many people are in your, I mean, because Dominic Day, the ex-teammate of yours at Saracens, he's your partner in that business and co-founder. What's the 4-5 team now? I mean, how many of you are in that team? Because that's something you should be really proud of.
Oh, it is. And like, we've got a really decent team of like full of decent human beings, which makes a huge difference of working daily. But we've got 7 of us and 1 in South Africa. So I keep saying we're in danger of making a business out of it, which is quite scary. I guess product-wise, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel, just trying to make better quality products rather than like, you know, what you can just really market really well. I think that an undertone of taking a product, taking out the nasties and putting in a better quality product.
We all like to think of ourselves as businessmen one day, but what surprised you most about running your own business?
Management of people is such a, like, nowhere near finished learning that skill, but I think, you know, you could be really good, I'm not saying I am, but you could be really good at finance or business or whatever, but, you know, to then go and manage people and, you know, the weight of, you know, you are looking after 7 people's livelihood and salaries and, you know, someone got kids and all these sort of things, so I think that management has been something that's been taking a while to grow, but also realising that people is everything. So, you know, getting the right people in the room.
Especially when you're a small team in the early days and getting that culture where you've got to roll your sleeves up and work hard.
Yeah.
You know, this is not, you know, nothing comes easy in any business. And part of the excitement of it all is actually being able to do that, roll your sleeves up and be a really sort of a nimble, agile team that can go out and have a lot of fun. Well, listen, we wish you every success. 4-5.
Yeah,
you know, listeners, if you want to get involved, is it 4-5, the website? Is
it? 4-5, spelled FOURFIVE.com. Yeah. And yeah, we'll chuck out a rugby 25.
Excellent.
So if you want a discount, I'll probably get my knuckles wrapped for that. I've said it now, so jump on it.
Good man. Well, listen, George, it's been a delight having you on the pod. Thank you very much. Good luck with whatever involvement you have with the England team ahead on the summer tour and obviously with 4-5. Great to chat to you.
Thank you, George.
Thank you, George.
Thanks for having us on.
Time now for the Evening Standard's rugby correspondent Nick Purewell to join us. Nick, you managed to arrive safely back from France. Overall, a lot of positives for England moving forward.
It's an excellent performance by England. Obviously, the result just eluded them. I thought it was fairly amusing to hear Steve Borthwick channel Michael Jordan, of all people, in his "We didn't lose, we ran out of time." I'm not entirely sure how much Borthwick's got in common with the Chicago Bulls basketball legend, but there we are.
Is that where that came from?
Yeah,
was
correct.
I didn't realise that.
But no, England played very well, you know, and I think one thing that is to their great credit is after 2 rounds of this tournament, you wouldn't have been saying England are the team that people would pay to watch, neutrals, but all of a sudden they are. So finally they've clicked into a bit of gear. I think there's been quite a lot of tension behind the scenes in terms of the coaching staff with people pushing in different directions, but really some of that is Borthwick not laying down the law, but just demanding high standards of his assistant coaches to lobby for certain directions for the team to go in. He wants a lot of substantive information when it comes to stats and detail and things like that. So I think Richard Wigglesworth deserves a bit of credit for that, for sticking to his guns and forcing the issue a little bit. And you've seen that come through in some of the attacking patterns there. shapes they're putting together now. And when they've got the personnel, then they've got a nice blend. I still think they'd be slightly concerned about depth in certain issues, still need probably more power options in midfield, but they're getting there. So that's a good start. It is tangible progress, and that's what they were looking for. So I think they can be relatively pleased with how things have gone.
Do you think that's the end then for, let's say, Danny Kerr, I would guess? Joe Marler looked like he was getting a little bit emotional on the pitch at the end of the game. Have we probably seen the last of them in an England shirt?
Well, we asked Danny Kerr that question after the match. I said to Danny, is that 101 and out? Will you raise your bat, or are you 101 not out still? And he said, well, for now, 101 not out. So
it's always hard to know, isn't it? Because I played in 2007 in the World Cup final, and I think I was pretty clear in my mind that that was my last game for England. And then I had 6 months of club rugby, and then that was it. And I think for me, because I knew that I'd already made that decision, the next 6 months, I was very focused. When the light goes out at international level, you know, you've got to be very clear about what you're doing after that, because, you know, it's a different game. It's a very different game. So he signed a one-year deal with Quinns. And I suppose as long as he's still playing rugby, if he's fit enough, why would he not make himself available for England?
And there's a tour to look forward to New Zealand, which is obviously still the pinnacle for many in terms of rugby. So why wouldn't you carry on?
I think sometimes the players have to be fairly sort of political with some of their answers, because they want to give Steve Borthwick the opportunity to move on if that's what he wants to do. And I think if Borthwick wants to go in a different direction and select somebody younger, then Danny Kerr would be the first person. He'd be gutted, but he's not the kind of guy who would stand in the way of that. So I think that kind of answer to that kind of question allows Borthwick the space to do his job and make the selection. You know, so he's effectively saying to Steve Borthwick, I'm available if you need me, but I understand if you don't. So, and I think that's a pretty sensible way to do it.
I think they'll keep an open mind, and Steve will sit down with each individual player and work out, you know, the plan. He can't go to New Zealand and leave all his experienced players behind. You just simply cannot do that. And therefore, it'll be fascinating to see what happens. I mean, listen, it's the return of the Premiership at the weekend. It'll also be the start of the Women's Six Nations. The Red Roses, of course, England's team, will be heading to Italy for their opening game as they hope to retain the Championship title for a sixth consecutive year. Wow. Captaining that team is, of course, our good friend Marley Packer, and she'll be on course to win her 100th cap. Quite an achievement. You've been keeping an eye across all of that, Nick?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it'd be fascinating to see how John Mitchell adapts to this. Obviously, he's such an experienced coach, and he has a really good way about him. I think hearing noises, you know, from the camp, I think the players are really enjoying what he's been doing. They've been impressed with his approach to the whole thing, really. Obviously, it's different coaching the women's game from the men's game, and I think they're kind of appreciating how he's adapted in that regard. So that's a good start. But yeah, I think they've got extremely high standards to maintain, haven't they? They're a very good, very strong squad, loads of depth, loads of quality. So the biggest thing really is John Mitchell's job is to add that kind of 2% stardust, isn't it? Because, you know, Home World Cup coming up, England need to, I suppose, in many ways, they're sort of expected just to win every game, aren't they? You'd expect them to win that World Cup, and they should do. So in many ways, it's about how they handle that pressure of being overwhelming favourites. But obviously still with a point to prove, because they didn't win the last one.
Yeah, a couple of domestic issues as well. We must say congratulations to Gloucester. Picked up their first silverware in 9 years on Friday. Another great performance from Zach Mercer, not in the England squad, but they lifted the Premiership Rugby Cup with victory over Leicester in form of a packed King's Home. That was fantastic for them. But also news yesterday, which brought a bit of delight to me, that London Irish could be coming back. Takeover talks, potentially with investor. Nick, is there any truth in that rumour? I mean, they're looking at 2025-26, which seems like a long way off, but at least something potentially good could come of what was an awful end to their season last season.
Yeah, it is correct that there's talks. The talks have been going on for some time. It's a German investor, and he's invested in a number of women's football teams, not least Halifax Women, who play in the third tier of the English system. And, you know, it's interesting. I would say there's still a lot of work to do for it to happen. And I think the fact that the discussions have been going on for a long time isn't indicative of the fact that anything is that close, to be quite honest. Not least, there's an awful lot of creditors. And obviously what was left behind is fairly messy. So that's not to say that they don't have the ability to take this on, but I think it's just a pretty tangled situation that they've really got to resolve before they can move it forwards.
Yeah. Now, this week, we are all going to be together raising money for Dallaglio Rugby Works and the annual Six Nations Lunch at Boys Dales, which we always look forward to, which starts at 11 a.m. and finishes at about 6 a.m. the next day. It isn't 6 a.m.
I think it's a post Six Nations wrap up annual breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Now, talking
way to describe it.
Raising money is very, very important, obviously, for the charity. Lawrence, you're about to embark on Cycle Slam, which is next month. How's your training going? And also, how can people donate money to what is such an incredible cause?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we're cycling for 10 days, 150 kilometres a day, up, down, up again, up even more. It's horrific, to be honest with you.
Just looking at your face, I can see how much you're looking forward to it.
I'm really not looking forward to it. I'm not a cyclist, but I have been not doing as much training as I should. I'm one of the few people listening to this pod that's probably delighted the Six Nations is finally finished.
Yeah.
Because it means I might be...
You can focus
now. I can focus now on getting myself cycle fit.
How many weeks have you got left?
I think it's about 4 weeks. Listen, I mean, I've nothing like leaving it till the last minute, like all good exam papers. But I'm okay. I'm going to look forward to it. Listen, it's a hell of a challenge as myself and about sort of 40 or 50 cyclists raising money to help ensure that the young people who are excluded from school all over the UK, 160 being excluded every single week, which is terrifying, and to make sure they're not excluded from society. Rugby Works exists to help them and give them a support system to get themselves back into full-time employment and education. If people want to donate, they can go to Just Giving Lawrence Dallaglio, or they can go to Rugby Works, dallagliorugbyworks.com, and please give generously, because all of the money that you donate will go towards helping these young people turn their lives around.
And this is the biggest event that you do across the calendar and goes a considerable way towards raising that sum of money that you need to exist, doesn't
it? Yeah, absolutely. Listen, the job we do is, you know, we raise 1.5 million a year. I'm working currently, the charity is working with over 2,000 young people each year. You know, we could be doubling, tripling that number quite comfortably. But this is not about giving them a rugby ball and feeling good about ourselves. This is about having a meaningful, tangible impact on their lives and actually turning people's lives around. And that's something very, very special, but does require a little bit of funding. And whatever money you're able to give, I can assure you it will go a very, very long way.
Well, well done. I know this is your last one, but if you do decide to carry on next year, you might get Batman and Robin here on their bikes. I should have taken part this year.
Steve,
you can
cycle uphill and Nick can be the downhill pursuit merchant.
I'll push him downhill.
Listen, I shall be at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium at the weekend, and then I'm actually going down to Bath on Sunday for Bath against Sale. So I've got a pretty busy weekend. Ooh. Nick, I'm assuming you're going to be at Tottenham Hotspur.
Absolutely, yeah. No, it's interesting. And I think it's a good point to make that most of the England players will play this weekend. Certainly Saracens guys are stepping straight back in. And I think, you know, there's going to be a big crowd at that match. And, you know, obviously Owen Farrell's fresh. You know, he's had a break and he's got a point to prove, and he wants to drag Saracens back into the playoff mix. So, and Quinns want to regain the momentum they had before the break. So it's going to be a great game.
Well, listen, get yourselves down to Tottenham Hotspur Stadium for Saracens against Harlequins on Saturday. My thanks to both Steve and Nick from the Evening Standard, to our wonderful guest this week, George Cruz, and of course to VoxPod Studios. A big thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. See you then.
The Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.